podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Churros y Tacticas podcast. It is Tuesday, September 7th, just after 9 a.m. Eastern. As I've mentioned to our patrons on Friday, I'm still on the no caffeine kick. So I'm actually a little bit better than I was on Friday, but I still have that brain fog thing going on in my brain. So I'm here, Keon Sabani, joined by Diego Lorin. Diego, how are you on this fine Tuesday?
I'm good, Keon. It's one of those random midweek days off in my case. So we had, of course, planned to have Graham Hunter on. However, that one is, again, needs taking a rain check. Graham has an interview right around, in 45 minutes time with the Aston Villa manager. And we're going to reschedule and reconvene to record on another day soon. So rain check on the Graham thing. Now, Keon, you talked about your clogged up brain due to your lack of caffeine intake. You were going in fourth gear. You were steering your way towards next Friday pod, seeing as there was no juices inspiring the old Keon Sobani brain cells when it came to football topics. I said, Keon, now's the time where we need to kick it into fifth gear, my friend. We got to get something out. There's plenty of stuff to talk about. There's actually has been a lot happening in the world of football, and not just on the pitch, primarily off the pitch, or some on the pitch as well. If you watched, tuned in to watch the Brazil Argentina game, I think we saw 4 minutes of action before that game got stopped in the historic ways. That in and of itself easily would fill up at least an hour pod, let alone half hour. But a lot happening off the pitch as well. A lot of people talking in the media. That's what these international breaks are for, of course. You had Gerard Piqué with some very interesting statements. You had Joan Laporta on Catalan national TV yesterday with some very juicy topics of its own, as well as, why not, Al-Khelaifi and Sheffieldin, who were at the Association of European Clubs, I think the organization is called. Anyway, they were out in the press and had their own things to say. So we're going to be talking
also
about that.
Aguero's comments made the rounds too about training sessions in England and, you know, showing up an hour before in England, and that was the normal thing.
Yeah.
And then when he does it at Barca, no one's there. I felt like that was more of like just like a conversational piece that came out, and it wasn't meant to be a Barca slander thing. That was my interpretation of it, but I'm curious to know what you think.
Well, you're right. He did say it in a conversational tone. He says it on, you know, this Twitch channel that he sort of part on, or he appears on. Ibai is one of them. I mean, he's a very famous personality in the world of gaming, in the world of Twitch. He's very close with all the football players. You see him regularly with Gerard Piqué, Kun. He was even there side by side Messi in the tunnel on the day of his PSG presentation. So you can just imagine how close this guy, this personality, is you know, with top players, with Ramos as well. So the point being is that yes, he was streaming alongside of Kun Agüero, and Kun mentioned to him how difficult he finds the traffic here in Barcelona, how the rules don't seem to make sense to him, the rules of the streets. Traffic streets of Barcelona. So we're talking about, you know, an exchange that he had with a cab driver. And in that tone, a very conversational tone, as you mentioned, he also mentioned the differences in training. Now, those statements again leave Barca in a very, you know, in a disappointing light. You know, when these things are said, and you read them or commented by in this case the newsroom, you do feel like a slap in the head moment, because it's similar to when Malcolm went to where did he go to over east, and talked about how training sessions are really only 45 minutes long, or, you know, these things have come out time and time again over the past few years, several seasons, during the Valverde era. And I guess they continue now with these kind of things where you're like, well, who was it? Spalletti as well, that talked about how if Inter would have the same practice sessions as Inter Milan, as Barca, they would concede 9 goals every single game. He's like, you know, we don't have those kind of training sessions here. And those are just things you start to question the intensity of it all, the seriousness behind this project, and the intent of the player, the motivation that's there, the fighting spirit and all that, the professionalism. So I think anyway,
it was also who was Junior Firpo when he went to Leeds. He said something like, mm-hmm. you know, when he went,
Firpo talked about it. Yeah.
They were talking about, like, you know, like, here in the first week, I've seen more film of myself than I have in my entire God. Career at Barca.
That's exactly what it said. That's exactly what it said.
The film sessions, all the training. I mean, we know, like, in England, the training sessions are a little bit more vigorous. Now, I'm curious to know, is that an English league thing? Is that will that be based on, because, like, you look at the managers in England, you know, not all of them are British managers, you know, like, you have plenty right. of outside of influence. So yeah. is that a league
More successful
thing? Is that a managerial season. Thing? Like, what's going on there? Why is this just?
Well, look, we know it's not a league thing. We know it's a managerial thing because, your Peps, your Klopps, you know, your, yeah. Well, so should we put Mourinho in the mix?
Well, he's not, while long, in no Spain, longer, you have psychopaths like Marcelino who weigh you every single day, and the training sessions are vigorous. You know, you have Ancelotti is a little bit more relaxed on that as opposed to right. somebody like Zidane. And so, like, it's a little bit, it will definitely be based on the manager. But, you know, so to be honest, like, I don't know how much Aguero meant that as, like, this is a bad thing. It's just more of, like, I showed up an hour before and no one was there because I'm just used to doing that in England, right? And kind of said
it doesn't leave it in a good light. And yeah, the intensity, you start to question the intensity of it. And that's unintentional perhaps, but it's pointing out an obvious, I think, element that's missing there. Yeah.
What stood out to you about the PK interview? Were there bits and parts of it that you really took away from, like, this is, I'm glad he said this, or this was controversial, or this I didn't know about, like the Shakira Pep thing, I did have
look,
no
you,
idea about.
You talk about intensity, and that's in particular why I mentioned Pep Guardiola, because that's the first thing that came to mind when we talked about you know, this intensity or lack thereof, rather, currently. And one of the well-known things, of course, that is now publicly being admitted by players is the tension that existed in the final stretch of Pep Guardiola's career, time at Barca. And there were, you know, so many instances that have been mentioned. The Messi opening a soft drink sort of during a team meeting, knowing that it was prohibited, right, to have soft drinks under Guardiola's regime, very strict on diet.
Does that include diet soda? Because
I said he wanted to control everything.
Hmm? Can they have diet soda, zero calories?
No sodas, no sodas.
Not even the aspartame one, zero calorie?
Look, I don't know. You have to ask Pep himself. But my understanding is no sodas.
Okay.
No sodas means no sodas.
Club soda, Schweppes?
Yeah, tonic. I mean, tonic.
How about con gas?
I walk on gas. I would hope so, man. And that's a fundamental ingredient or a drink, of course, with your meals here in Spain.
This is my contribution to today's podcast. Just throwing bullshit at you while you're talking. Sorry,
that's all right. No, but so, you know, Pep is obviously the first coach that you think of when somebody who's ultra, you know, wants to micromanage, ultra controlling over his players. Also the timings and, you know, Piqué said that, look, there was a moment when the tension just became too much. And according to Gerard, that was when he started to date music artist Shakira, his, of course, now wife and mother of his, what is it, two, no, three kids? Yes, three kids, I think.
My wife would know, probably.
Right. So... That stood out to me because for me, not that everything changed there, but I think there was a fundamental shift in the, at least in the weight and the, I guess the power that the dressing room had, the players had over the coaches since then. If you look, the coaches that have, you know, preceded since the departure of Pep, it's, Tito, of course, may rest in peace, and he did very well. But not necessarily somebody that I would imagine would have had the authority over the dressing room that Pep had. Tata Martín, well, we know what happened there. Luis Enrique tried and did until that fateful day in, was it Eibar, where he left, I want to say Neymar on the bench, and I might be getting this completely wrong. I think it was Eibar, where the dressing room started to turn on Luis Enrique and, you know, we're, you know, basically saying, look, we are the ones that really carry the weight here, or at least make the decisions. And you can't make these kind of decisions because we're, you know, they're going to come back and haunt you and turn against you. And therefore your time when the club will be short lived. Because we all know that the first, when things go wrong, the first person to go is always the coach, right? And there was that moment which, you know, blew up in the media where Luis Enrique checked with Messi if he wanted to come off or not. And Messi said, no. That blew up in the media, like, oh, you know, I mean, Messi's clearly the one here making all the decisions. And it was all MSN. And I don't think Luis Enrique necessarily got the credit that he deserved neither for just how well that team played and executed and dominated, controlled their games. It was all MSN until things went wrong, and then it became Luis Enrique and therefore his departure as well. Subsequently to that, of course, Valverde, well, we know that was, I mean, the ultimate gift to the dressing room, to the Barca heavyweights, to these guys that wanted to be more in control of you know, their day to day, and felt that they had done the necessary success to kind of, I guess, determine as well how intense they take their trainings and what happens when, and I mean, so many things change as well within the club, I would say, then as well. But
did PK comment on Aguero's comment? By the way, I didn't see that. I feel like maybe it was
the hour. I don't know. I don't think he did.
Something, was it? Oh, but he didn't comment.
I don't know if he did. That was a very good question. I would love to know. I have to read it or watch it in its entirety. Because yeah, I would love to know. But just to finish that, Valverde, Setién, and now Koeman, of course. So, you know, Ronald Koeman, I think, is in an interesting situation because the club or the team, everything is hit rock bottom. And we've all got to make sacrifices now to work our way back up to the top. And Koeman at least is somebody that is respected, that is authoritative, and is not scared to neither, as he showed at his time, Valencia in particular, to put aside the old guard and the heavyweights, the vacas sagradas of the dressing room, and instead give way to the new guard. Easier now, I mean, to some degree, Koeman would like him to be more, obviously, brave in apostar, in betting on these young guns, giving them more minutes. They find him a little bit too, I guess, half-stepping in that sense, still prioritizing perhaps maybe the bigger names, players. A lot of people now are scared that Coutinho will get excessive minutes for the sake of being called Coutinho. And of course, the heavy burden of his price tag and things, and that might hinder the progress, therefore, for the younger players in the midfield, depending where he could put Coutinho up top as well, but maybe still obstruct.
He's not a, can I just interject? He's not a bad player. I mean, he's obviously, we but measure him at a certain price tag. And, you know, do you remember like when he first signed for Barca, his first couple of games, he actually was a really nice fit. You know, the way he roamed in the middle of that left half space, cutting in the way Iniesta did, obviously not on that level, but it was at least encouraging. And he's not a bad player if we give him a chance. I wouldn't be too worried about that from your perspective, because Pedri is just better than him and Pedri's there in that position, right? Unless you have, but as like a Pedri backup, it's not a bad option to have. Like if you just disregard the money aspect and how much he's costing you, in a vacuum, he's a good player to have off the bench. Like it's not a huge deal, right? And now he's part of the squad. You couldn't get rid of him, so he's there.
Well, he's there. I mean, but that's the thing. The squad is still too deep. I think, you know, it was said that I think officially we have 24 players registered, but it still stretches out to, I think, 26 at least. We had 31, of course, at some point in the preseason.
That includes Kun, right?
It includes Kun as well.
Looks like he will be registered eventually, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point we can all safely assume that at least he will play a game with Barca, because the way he talks, that would not happen. So when he is ready, I'm expecting him to play. All this to say that, you know, control, the authority of the manager, I think, is fundamental. I think the players recognize it themselves as well. I think things went a little bit too far for too long. And that's not to say I think that the authoritative approach drains quickly, but that's a different topic. You know, you should then wonder, well, who do you turn more often? Should it be the role players turning more, and you have your stars, let's say your superstars, and you just continuously build around them and sort of exprimir, you kind of drain out these role players for as much as possible, make them play at their highest level for as long as possible? Because Pep was very, let's say, if you want to say, use the word lenient or respectful of Messi not pressing at some point. You know, it was not the 11 players or the 10 players rather full on pressing, you know, for the entire duration of 90 minutes. We did see Messi switch on and off, and Pep understood perfectly that that is necessary. However, the problem becomes, or the problem starts to exist when you have too many superstars that simply will not follow the orders of the head coach. And if he's demanding, you know, a full pressing style of play, if you have three players that are not chasing, that are not tracking back, that are not putting in the defensive effort to regain possession, to help out, you know, then your approach needs to be different.
And that, can I say, Diego, that's, by the way, is part of the reason why MSN is almost underrated to me, even though we know their greatness. Like, okay, so it really depends on the fit, right? If you pair Messi with, let's say, Hazard and Asensio, you're going to get ripped apart because none of those three players are going to defend. You paired Messi with Neymar and Suarez, and Neymar, like, defended like a madman with Barca up and down the flank. Suarez is an animal. He's like, he's just going to put in every ounce of energy he has. Like, that's not, I don't know, like, that's why, like, I don't know if you saw, but Ronaldo Nazario had an interesting comment over the weekend where he said that, you know, like, everyone's talking about PSG. Like, look, I played in the Galacticos. We never won a Champions League together.
Yeah, I read that.
The five of us. I mean, obviously they won before he got there, but which, like, you know, there's other reasons for that. Obviously it's because they just did not invest in any defensive minded players, and there was no balance, and PSG has a little bit more balance than that Galactico team had. But, you know, I think about it like this, like, you and I had talked about MSN is a better version of right now what PSG's front three is, and they had a better supporting cast than this PSG team. Now, that team did win one Champions League with Lucho, but it definitely wasn't like it was never a given. Like, it was not a sure thing with them. And that's why I'm still kind of skeptical about this PSG project, also because it relies on health. But that was a deviation. Sorry.
No, it just surprised me. And I hear what you say. I read that as well. And I think he obviously has a very fair point, and it is to be seen, even though all of us culés are very pessimistic about it and are dreading the image of Messi hoisting the Champions League trophy with another shirt, let alone PSG. But what stood out to me, just the Neymar and his defensive sacrifices, so to speak, that, you know, you were that impressed. Not many here were. I mean, I think Jordi Alba would have something to say about that.
Alba's wrong too. That Neymar, like, he would actually track like a madman and work really hard off the ball.
In his first two seasons, I think. Yes,
it's true that Barca's pressing as a whole was not as aggressive as it was under Pep, but, you know, they just had to change the style of play. They couldn't, they just weren't pressing as much as they were. And naturally, you know, you can, I guess, but because the players are different. And as you said, the superstars are different, and, you know, you want to conserve the energy in different ways, especially with Messi. But
so another thing, and I want to sort of jump topic here, because it's something I really do want to address on the pod. And we've been asked about the Super League. We were asked about it on Friday, and that was prior to these statements. And at that time, I forget who our patron was, but I didn't really, or you and I really didn't delve much into the topic again, because for me, it was sort of a chapter that is not closed, but still being written. And it was a little bit on a hiatus. There was a writer's break, so to speak, because we didn't really hear much about it. So my opinions haven't changed much neither. Now, Laporta, like I said, Joan Laporta, Barça president, was on a local television station and on program, on TV program. And well, he addressed the rumor whether or not he attempted to sign Neymar over the summer. And he actually admitted that, yes, we did establish contact with the intent of seeing if Neymar would be willing to come back to Barça. And as we keep hearing time and time again, the initial response from the Neymar camp, Neymar always seems super enthusiastic and willing and dying to come back. Because also Joan Laporta said, yes, he said, you know, he's very eager to come back to Barça. And what happened? Well, besides obviously the whole financial aspect, and he did address the fact that this was before he was fully aware of the financial situation, and that you know, that his decision would have been another one had he known that obviously after the audit. But he said at the time it immediately became a no-go because Neymar, right, as he's called, Neymar padre, the dad of Neymar, got the very luscious, voluptuous, delicious, juicy gift of 20 million euros deposited in his bank account. Now, how do you compete with that? You know, these 20 million are not on record in the club record anyway, because this was a gift from you know, the people, the good people, the fine people over in Qatar. And you know, we heard also Sheferin and Al Khalifi talk in this this clubs association thing yesterday, where Al Khalifi was asking Sheferin, sitting next to him, for more flexible rules on financial fair play. And you just wonder, like, how is it possible that there's a club out of nowhere that now is in a position where they can reject 200 million euros, even though this player is gone? They will give up, you know, any sort of income, and massive income for that matter, near record-breaking income for a transfer of a player, and they can just simply give up on that, you know, retain him against the player's wish, and retain players desperate or wishing to leave by simply depositing large sums of money in the agent's family's bank accounts. And it's it does come up, you know, you're like, why? I with all this information at hand, known to the public, we're all able to, you know, make our own decisions and draw our own decisions. And obviously, I respect them all, and I learn from most of them. However, for me to completely dismiss the argument of a Super League being a good thing, by arguing that football's for the fans and all these cliches and these sob stories that we hear that really just are a bunch of hypocrisies. You know, why is this not more of a topic, and why is there not more people actually arguing for the Super League, or at least hearing it out and recognizing and you know, addressing publicly that clubs like PSG have to be stopped, in or at least, you know, abide by the rule that we all have to abide by, and understand that, yes, you know, Barca and Real Madrid are not owned by, you know, they're public, they're owned by the members, right? They're not private associations, privately owned. But at some point, Kian, I think you and I were going to have to start discussing the topic on a podcast, the very realistic possibility that one day we will be talking about Barça and Real Madrid being privately owned clubs. Because if not, I don't see how we can continue. And even though, you know, of course it's good for a club like Real Madrid to be able to offer up those 200 million. And it's almost silly, right? It's crazy money. If you think about it, for a player that has just 10 months left on his contract, you're like, just wait it out. Where did you even like, and I saw, who was it on the BBC? Ex-England manager, manager of Sunderland as well. I forget his name, but he's saying, like, questioning where these 200 million come from. And it's really quite easy. Florentino has not been, you know, making massive purchases. He has been splashing money on silly young talent, but not like we've seen in the Galactico days. Madrid has been selling very high. And look, I don't know the details as to how they scraped the money together, but I'm pretty sure the numbers can be added up. And I'm sure to find a journalist behind Managing Madrid will be able to give me an answer right away to that question. How, you know, by doing the math, how you got the 200 million. But it's like, but the point being, Keon, is that I'm trying to make is that was hard earned money. You know, that was money scraped together by sales, by lowering the salary cap, you know, and on all those kind of things, by getting rid of players with large contracts, and not just simply, you know, given like this by some massive, you know, tycoon and ultra elite, you know, affluent person or state or whatever you want to call it, the Russian oligarch, etc. So anyway, and that is, to link it all together, that's why I think the Super League should be a very real discussion. I'm happy to see that Madrid, Barca, Juventus are still with the intention of putting something together on the table that allows, you know, these great clubs, historic clubs, to continue to be relevant in the conversation of the acquisition of big players, etc.
So I would say no to Real Madrid and Barcelona ever being owned to private clubs. I just don't, the downside of it is greater than, like, the downside is what happens to Valencia under Peter Lim. The downside is what I think is going to come with PSG also in a few years. Like, when they pull that money out, that team is just going to get gutted. There's a collapse waiting there.
You think it's a bubble?
Yeah, for sure. I don't, that's not going to be something that, like, I don't think 15, 20 years from now, we're going to be talking about PSG still in that light.
But answer this question. How do you expect us to compete then?
Well, it needs a systemic overhaul. Like, there shouldn't be, like, it's a legal thing, right? The fact that PSG are allowed to deposit money in a family's bank account and they're allowed to turn down 200 million, it's because then they're in a position basically where money does literally grow on trees for them. And they have zero care about where the money goes and what happens to it. They don't care if it gets burned in flames or if it goes into Neymar's father's account. Mm-hmm. So the only solution to me is basically look at the NBA model. It needs, like, everyone has a salary cap and you can only go over the salary cap if you're willing to dip into the luxury tax. And not everyone's going to dip into the luxury tax unless they have a chance to compete with a real roster. Like, now I know, like, that is not easily, you can't copy and paste that exactly, but, and the NBA has its problems too. It's not flawless. Like, bigger markets like Los Angeles can dip into luxury tax because they will generally have higher power to attract stars and they have
stars,
more justification fans, to do that.
Fan base.
Right. But it needs at least some structure. Right now, the structure doesn't exist. Financial fair play wasn't designed to be fair. It was designed so teams don't go bankrupt. So PSG doesn't have it.
Right.
They don't have the issue of going bankrupt. So they don't have to play fair with anybody. They can just put all the money in. They're like, oh, we're under the guidelines because we're not in danger of going under. Right. So it needs to. And the problem is no one trusts UEFA to be the ones to come up with this system, especially when Al Khelaifi is their little pet because he's the one who stood up to the Super League and didn't join it. And he's the one giving money to their, putting money in their pockets. I don't have proof of that part, but I think we can all at least assume
They're not, you mean money in the pockets of who? The sheikhs?
No, like Seferi.
No. Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
that's a big statement, but let's not
pretend like that can't be a possibility when they're bending over backwards.
Seeing PSG, how things were run and dealt in within the FIFA, you know, that is not a stretch
and
in the imaginations.
Yeah, and the track record.
That's what I mean. We're blatter. Yeah.
So it needs an overhaul. And
I don't know, we just have to wait
for all these players to become like, this is the thing. If
the thing is, once the change happens or whatever change might happen, it might be too late for Barca or, you know, a Juve or a Madrid, even as unimaginable as it is.
Not necessarily. How much did Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol, Piqué, Messi cost you? How much does Pedri cost you? Like, you guys have all, you guys have a good youth pool you can draw from. You know, I'm not obviously.
But how can we enjoy the youth when teams even like Leipzig are able to snipe away our talent because they have bigger presupuestos, bigger budgets, more money? You know, Barca has always and has been in danger of that. The lure was you get to play for Barca and still have a good contract, but the money that they're offering, abroad is just—it's too much for a generation. We're living in an age of instant gratification. I don't just mean that with players, but the people surrounding the players. You know, it's money, 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 man, and you know they have a lot of power over the players, and maybe even the players themselves are more attracted to the lure of the quick bling and the nice cash.
You have to remember that if Laporta was your president over the past 4 years and not Bartomeu, you wouldn't have been in this position, right? It wouldn't have been as difficult. Like Messi would have still been a Barcelona player because all of these, these are all dominoes that this is why he's leaving. It's things that happened years ago, right? Leading up to it. Mm. So you would have had Messi still. You may have, who knows? You may have had Neymar still. I don't know. I can't promise you that part, but maybe you wouldn't be able to.
Probably not
because it's PSG, but you get my point. Like you're able to hold and retain stars and pay them and sign stars way, way better than the situation now because of Bartomeu, you know, screwed you guys over. And that's why Real Madrid's situation isn't as bad as you guys is financially because Florentino was there. So
it's pretty stunning though. What I always wonder as well is would we have been in this situation had Bartomeu been more responsible or just simply managed the Neymar transfer better? And by that, I mean the funds received, the 222 million. Yeah. And it reminds me, I was going to ask Graham on a pod today as I was preparing for our interview / chat, what parallels can be drawn between how badly Gaspar fumbled the Figo funds and Bartomeu the Neymar funds so I think there are definitely similarities, and
it'll always be a what if situation. A public company, you can vote out Bartomeu. Imagine if it was a privately owned company and Bartomeu was just forever there.
That's the downside, right?
There was one thing that PK said that was interesting to me that I you didn't touch on, but I thought was important. And if I'm a Barca fan, I'm happy he said it. Was he called out the socios, like he was talking about Umtiti, and like he doesn't understand why Umtiti is getting booed because he never has missed a workout or a training session, and he's trying. And it's not his fault he was given that contract. It's Bartomeu's fault, and that's the socios' fault for voting Bartomeu in. I thought that was a really good. I'm not aligned with PK a lot of the times. I
laugh. You are, actually. It seems that you say that more often than I hear you disagree with PK. You like PK. You agree with him.
Anyways.
It's okay, Kia. Let it go. Okay, PK, I love you.
I want a double date with me, you, PK, and Ramos. I thought it was an important comment to make because here's my question. Do you think that the fans will actually react to that comment in a way that
because everybody agrees. Look, all he did was point out an obvious point, and so one that we've addressed as well.
I'm saying, do you think fans will stop booing Umtiti now after he said that?
Yeah, I think definitely. You'll hear one or two and then it'll fade away. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why I thought it was an important comment and a correct point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's funny. I didn't think we have that much to talk about today. And I
said, I told you, man, we got plenty. We got plenty. We're good. But and we didn't even talk about the Brazil-Argentina thing, which my dad was texting me like mad. At that point, I was actually putting my kid to bed, and I was having a very tough time doing so. I'm having a very serious father-son conversation about how important it is to go to bed early. He's got to get back into the school rhythm. That the summer clock is over. It's no more late nights. Party's over. It's like, you know, early nights again.
Man. And put yourself
three month holiday again. Kids here have a 3 month summer holiday. In Holland, we used to have a month and a half. We had 6 weeks. It was one of the biggest injustices growing up as a kid, coming here and having to go back like midsummer already because I was starting school and knowing that these damn kids here would have another month and a half holiday. 3 months.
I think school should start. Like, I'm okay with school start. I think it should start later in the day. Like these kids shouldn't have to wake up at like.
No, I agree.
You know, from depending on where you are in the world, it's anywhere between.
But they
6
do.
To 7:30, I think they should.
Thing
start
is, they do wake
at
up
like 11 and end at 4. Give them 5 hours of good education.
Intense.
Let them run around in the gym and then come home. Instead, of they're just. I'm putting myself in the kids' shoes. That's all.
It's not a bad one. Yeah. It's not a bad. It takes the whole morning rush and stress out of the way as well, which is awful. Right. We have a commute now as well, and it's busy. Yeah. So why did I bring that up?
Brazil, Argentina.
Ah, yes. That as I was having this conversation with my son, telling, you know, putting him to bed, and he kept coming out. And anyway, it was a stressful affair. My dad's calling me and texting me, going, check out, you're watching the game. Go to the TV. I've never seen anything like this in history. Never seen like this in my life. And I'm going, God damn, like, stop calling me. And I'm like, God, I said, go to bed. You got to go to bed because this, that, and the other. Eventually, I got to the TV and I saw Messi in like a photographer, like a photographer. Jesus Christ, photographer. Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, not just the pass. He was wearing like the
The outfit. You know, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, the peton they call it here, like the jersey.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, see now I'm tuned in, and there's a whole political stunt. This entire thing, and really a stain, and historic, but a stain on South American football, in Brazil in particular, of course, and the ramifications, the consequences, I guess we'll see. Well, I saw that Brazil can be basically slapped down with the loss, and therefore Argentina being rewarded the points. Some are saying that they'll just continue to play on the group stages as normal, and this game will not even have been needed to play if they have enough points to qualify, if that makes any sense. Or it'll be postponed for a later date, but it's massive just because, you know, here in Spain it was prime time. It was 9 o'clock. Movistar had their rights, and it was a lot of people were tuned in, and it became, you know, almost a massive talking point. And
less
unusual scenes.
I didn't watch it live, and I only heard it about the next morning. I was away, and there's people who cover this story more thoroughly and way better than I can ever explain it. So I don't really want to get into it for that reason. But I will just say, I think it's crazy that it got to that stage and it just wasn't prevented. This whole thing wasn't prevented in the first place. Like, I know from what I understand, they tried to prevent it on the weekend before the game happened, but it's still like, it was a little bit confusing and there were so many different parties involved. But I'm just amazed that like they just didn't prevent this. Like, there's four players who have to quarantine. Okay, so just do that. It's like, and then there was like, then there's the whole criminal side of things where the players lied on their custom forms and said, you know, we're not something. There was something that there was a lie, right? That, you know, we don't need to quarantine or something like that. And they actually did. So there's a whole battle of this legal perspective, and then there's the football perspective, and then there's the CONMEBOL and the AFA and all these different things. Crazy that it got to this stage. That's all I really have to say. And yeah, I've never seen anything like that. It's kind of like when the only thing it reminded me of is like when the quarantine first broke out in the NBA.
Right. Yeah. Jazz, those cases.
And who was it? Utah and I want to say,
I think it was Miami.
I don't know. And the officials running. Well,
no, sorry. They were in Miami.
It was Oklahoma City because it was Gobert. Oh, it was OKC in Utah because it was OKC and Gobert had just tested positive. So, and then the doctors.
And then that
run
famous
the
press
court.
Conference.
Yeah.
Where he's touching the mics. Yeah.
The doctors run on the court after the game has started and they're like, no, Gobert has been tested positive and they cancel the game and everyone leaves the stadium. That was crazy. That was surreal to see. So that kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, did we hit it all?
We're good.
Okay, cool.
Proud of you. Fifth gear. Churros.
Thanks. I dug deep, man. I dug deep. So Friday, patreon.com/churrosytacticas.
Don't forget, Kian, they want us to go away, but we're not going away.
That's true.
They want us not to record an episode, but we are going to continue to record. Sorry. Sorry, haters. We're still here.
And we're not going anywhere. Every Friday, patreon.com/churrosytacticas and follow us on Twitter @churrostacticas without the Y. Thanks, Diego. Appreciate it. Have a great
Thank
day.
You.
Talk Friday. Peace.
Sports Social Podcast Network.